You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hello. What's up, universe? Jose Youngs here with MMAfighting.com. No, Sean did not grow hair. No, Mark Raimondi did not get more handsome. It is I, Jose Youngs, your new host of MMA Fighting's A-Side Live Chat. Joining me, Alexander K. Lee. Been on the show before. Alex, how you doing?
I'm very good. Sorry, I was just retweeting this historic show, this historic pairing of Jose Youngs and Alexander K. Lee. The new faces, the new generation, I feel, of MMA media.
We've gotten a lot of questions about that, so I'm sure we'll hit them going down. But before we start, I know we normally start at 10 a.m. Pacific time, like 1 p.m. Eastern time, but there was some Vox Media prior scheduling conflicts, so we had to bump this to an hour later. But next week and moving forward, we will be start at the normal time. But this is just a one-time thing. It just so happened to be it was my very first time hosting this. So, but without further ado, because this is not our show, this is your all show. So before, we're going to jump into the comment section first. If you obviously we're going to answer the green questions, you know the drill. Go on Twitter, use the hashtag the A side, and we'll hit your questions. But Alex, first question: Uriah Faber's comeback. What is the point? From our friend Trumbo. Hey guys, good morning and good luck on the newest version of the live chat. Sure you'll kill it. Thanks, guy or gal. I'm having a hard time seeing the purpose of to Uriah's comeback. He's 40, which is really old for the lower weight classes. His style and skill set seems antiquated for at least the last 5 years, and I doubt he has any chance against the elite of the division. He seems to have plenty of money. What is the point? Alex, last week, there was hinting, obviously, he was on the MMA Hour, that Uriah Faber hinting at a comeback. It was later announced that he'll be fighting Ricky Simone at UFC Sacramento, his hometown. So, to answer the question, what is the point? Does he have enough money? Should he be fighting? He is a new dad. Alex, your thoughts?
Okay, we'll get to the matchup, the specific matchup with Simone later. That is a strange one. I'm not sure I can explain that one. But first, why come back at all? Well, I tweeted something the other day. Also, the first time I was on the show a few weeks ago, I wanted people to know that my mission statement is MMA is supposed to be fun. That's the most important thing. I know it's a business. I know we cover it. You know, we know all about the ins and outs of the business, the way it has to be. It's not always pretty, but it is a sport. It is entertainment. It's supposed to be fun. And I think having guys like Uriah Faber fighting in their home, in close to home in Sacramento, that to me is fun. Now I know, again, you know, fighters staying past their best before date, That's not so fun. And, you know, again, there's examples, BJ Penn, Chuck Liddell, that comeback, I wouldn't call that fun. But in general, I'd like to think that soon we can find some sort of balance where maybe guys like Uriah fight once a year, if they're able, if they want to, you know, if everything, all the medicals check out, and anytime like the UFC comes to Sacramento or somewhere near, you know, California, a region that Faber is very popular in. Imagine if George St. Pierre fought once a year in Montreal, something like that. You know, it's someone, when I mentioned this the other day, someone replied to me, well, you know, it's just going to result in some really ugly matchups and you know, promoters not necessarily looking out for the fighter's best interests. But again, I'm an idealist. I'm an optimist. I like to think this idea could work, you know, even kind of relates to the Legends League that people are always talking about, either in like Bellator or UFC. But generally, just speaking about Uriah, I think, you know, he's not quite ready to let go yet. He's still in fairly good shape. He trains all the time. Obviously, he's the head of Team Alpha Male. So this seems harmless, other than the fact that he's fighting a legit future contender who could maybe really hurt him. But other than that, you know, he loves it, and I think it's good for the fans, Sacramento.
And a comment underneath it said he had an interview with Dan Hardy where he basically announced this, and I haven't watched that full interview yet. He said he's looking to raise capital for new business ventures, and this was the quickest way to do it, is putting his name out in the limelight. Is that a smart decision, fighting to grow your businesses, or just fighting because you like to fight?
Man, I don't know how much money, you know, Uriah's made fighting. I imagine a pretty good amount just based on how often he's fought, how high profile his fights were. But, you know, for most fighters, we know even a lot of the guys who are main card mainstays, they don't always make the most money. So I hope that that's not primarily the reason. I'm sure it won't hurt. I'm sure whatever sponsorship and, you know, set whatever salary he happens to get, because I don't think that's smart if he's just coming back and thinks, and you know, is planning to just use that money to whatever business ventures he plans to get into. But again, I don't know the state of his finances. Maybe he knows he needs X amount of cash and he's working at that deal with the UFC and that'll fund, you know, whatever he plans to do next. So, but just doing it for the money seems ill-advised.
And my take is like Uriah's always been one of those fighters that he has a lot of businesses, whether they succeeded or failed. Like, remember they had like MMA, like university, like a few years ago or whatever. And then he had like the Forum, which was like a clothing company. I think John Jones is actually he sponsored like John Jones early in his career. It doesn't surprise me. It's weird to me because his fight against Brad Pickett, his actual retirement fight in Sacramento, was such a good send off. Like he beat a fellow veteran in his hometown. He got the like people were. I remember watching that, and it went to a decision, obviously. And with 10 seconds left, the fans in the arena were like counting, like 10, 9, like these are the last 10 seconds we'll ever see Uriah Faber in the octagon ever again. And he did say on the MMA Hour that he has a little bit of FOMO fear missing out. So maybe he just really wants to be a part of the ESPN era. Maybe this is just a one-off. He wants to see if his body gets landed, but he is a new dad too. You always hear like, especially Cowboy before his fight in Denver, that all fight week, he's like, nothing's new. This child hasn't changed anything. And then he actually fought and he completely 180. He's like, as soon as the fight was over, I only wanted to see my new kid. So, you have to wonder where his head's at, but I'm not one to tell fighters when they should hang it up.
Well, before we move on, I just want to say there's a quote from the Tom Cruise movie Cocktail where one of the characters says, everything ends badly, otherwise it wouldn't end. So I hope that's not the case here. Again, it has been the case for some fighters in the past, but let's hope that Uriah has more success in his comeback.
And moving on, next question from Greb77. Yoel Romero's court win against supplement company, your reactions. Do you think more lawsuits will follow? And then right below it, $27 million is a lot of bread. Will Yoel fight again? Well, and to set the scene, Yoel Romero, he won his lawsuit against, I can't remember the company off the top of my head, but basically he filed a lawsuit for like a tainted supplement and he won and he's receiving $27 million. So obviously he's not just receiving just a giant, all that money right away. Like it's obvious, like they have to figure out how he's going to get paid, but he won the lawsuit. Your thoughts? Will more lawsuits follow? Is this a turning point in this whole tainted supplement debacle that we've seen in the last few years?
So the company is called Gold Star Performance Products, which with a name like that, I'm so disappointed that they would be involved in any sort of chicanery that would get fighters in trouble and result in them taking this massive lawsuit hit. You know, I think, again, I'm no legal expert, but I think as a lot of comments I've seen, which I agree with, is that the likelihood of getting all of that 27 some million, doubtful. I don't know again the finances of this company, but if they can't afford to take that hit, you know, they're going to declare for bankruptcy, and it's very likely that Yoel receives a fraction of that, right? 27 million. Now what a fraction of that is, how much of a fraction, whether that be enough to get him to contemplate retirement, I doubt it. I think it, you know, whatever money he gets, it'll be, you know, huge for sure. And I do think other fighters would be wise to consider their options based on this verdict. How much success will they have? Again, it's going to depend from case to case. You know, for Yoel, I think he will fight again. I don't think this is the sort of thing. He loves fighting. He loves fighting and competing. I think he still wants that UFC title. So, yeah, good for him for whatever money he can make from this. But we'll definitely see him several more times inside the octagon.
And what do you think about him actually winning the lawsuit? I mean, like you said, this is basically just like a fancy, I owe you $27 million. Like, he's going to get a very small fraction of it. But at the end of the day, he did win this lawsuit. Is how, like, now going forward, say, fill in the blank, like, has a tainted supplement, lawsuit right away. Like, there's now precedent that they can win these lawsuits.
Yeah. And again, for a lot of fighters, I always feel bad for some of them that, again, the people before this who either hadn't considered this option or maybe was they had poor representation or their cases were just, you know, so different that they, you know, couldn't reach the same conclusion that Romero got to. So I don't know. I'm talking about, if we're talking about the court of public opinion, I don't know how much this is going to help fighters who get into this kind of trouble. For example, look at Yoel. I mean, Yoel, even before he got into trouble, just because of his insane physique, you had a lot of people questioning stuff. Obviously, Michael Bisping made a lot of cracks about it. He's a rival. So I think Yoel said that, you know, he's very happy. It's not about the money. He feels vindicated that and he's innocent. But sadly, the stuff was still in his system. And there are fighters who are going to have things in their system who, you know, that excuse may not be as truthful. So how much does it mean to win in the eyes of the fans? I don't know if it changes things. I think the people who thought he was dirty might still feel that way. And I think the people who thought he was mostly innocent will still think he's mostly innocent. So,
and I actually think it's not going to sway everyone, but I actually do think in the eyes of the public, this might actually benefit him. I mean, he took this company to court and won. Like, obviously he's not going to get all the money. We've said that before, but the optics are, they were proven wrong. He was proven right. Like, if you just don't know anything about law and you just see he won a court case against a major company, that I think that does a lot for how the public views him. And he is fighting Paulo Costa later on this year. He is returning. I'm sure we're going to get to ask him a lot of questions about that, whether he received any of the money, whether he wants to keep fighting. So I obviously can't speak of whether he'll fight again, but I bet in August he's going to get asked that a lot. But moving on, Alex, another interesting business question. Endeavor going public from our friend Ted Bear. When might this happen? What do you expect to learn about the UFC? Will Dana continue to Dana? Would you invest? So, Alex, WME, IMG, Endeavor, whatever you want to call them, they did go public. I did read through that giant booklet they put out, like laying out their business plans. Not just for the UFC, this is everything, because they are this massive media conglomerate. They are the parent company of the UFC. They bought them from the Fertitta brothers for like the $4.6 billion, whatever, a few years ago. And they did lay out some potential risks, as any smart businessman will do. And they brought up like possibly being sued for like long-term effects of concussion, like possibly like collective bargaining. There was a lot of risk that they laid out in this. Like, this booklet is public, not like you can go and read it for free. But your initial reaction for the Endeavor and basically the UFC going public, because Dana said, maybe for those of you who don't know that, someone asked him, would the UFC ever go public? He basically said, not as long as I'm president. Doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, you know, Dana says a lot of things, and yep. maybe he believed that at the time he said it. I don't think he's going to, you know, voluntarily step aside or that his role will even change that significantly. He's a good figurehead. I know people don't think so. I know certainly we in the journalist side of things have our frustrations with Dana White. But if you want to talk about someone who is front and center of the company and takes a lot of the heat and takes a lot of the flack, he's very good at that. Whether you believe he is responsible for a lot of the woes of the company, it's maybe a matter of opinion, might be a matter of perspective. But he is good in that job, and I think regardless of whether they're changed to going public, I think he still can perform that role fairly strongly. So, and he'll adapt. He'll adapt. He's adapted before. He's adapted as the company has grown. This might be a big adjustment for him, but no, I don't think we see Dana White going anywhere, not based on this anyway, not just based on them going public.
And what do you think? Because a lot of the, for years, people have wanted to open the books of the UFC. Now that they're public, they're going to pull the curtain back on the UFC a lot. So basically, what are you hoping to learn about the UFC now that we can open these books?
I don't know. It's so much. I mean, obviously, if we could learn more about those individual contracts, goodness, yeah, that would be helpful. I mean, you know, there's rumblings, there's rumors, there's people who have accidentally put out the contracts and fight agreements on social media, which they weren't supposed to. So people have kind of glimpsed them, but it's never been, you know, like I said, never been made public. So now that everyone can see them, I hope this, if not just for the fans, but I hope the fighters, I know they see the contracts, but I hope they can, I don't know. I just want to, I guess more for the fans, that everyone can see, you know, the circumstances that these fighters and their management are dealing with. And again, maybe they already knew, maybe they didn't, but I hope it opens their eyes and sees that some of the practices that the company is going, you know, undergoes are not ideal for the fighters or the product. That said, the UFC, you know, they've kind of been involved in a lawsuit, a pretty big long lawsuit. I think an antitrust lawsuit over the last few years. And I feel like that's actually, and now that they're going public, is a good thing. It's given them a chance to sort of examine themselves and kind of figure out, okay, what do we need to change? What do we need to possibly hide? You know, I don't know, that's not very ethical, but what do we need to fudge? You know, what can we fudge? What do we need to fudge so that when this goes public, people see it and aren't quite, you know, aren't alarmed by what's going on? So in a sense, yeah, that kind of worked out for them. They're probably a little more prepared to go public than people expect and to have their numbers and things revealed.
And I'm very fascinated by this story, but it just happened. Like, they're still in the early stages. I'm sure Dane's going to get asked this by everyone. I'm sure going down the road, we're going to talk about this a lot more, but it is the early stages. Ask us again in a month, and I bet we'll have even more questions. Well, maybe we've learned more, but me personally, I am very excited to follow this story. But moving on.
Can I stop pretending I'm smart now that I have knowledge of real world things?
Don't sell yourself short, Alex. Oh, you're a smart guy up there in Canada.
Well, smart enough.
All right, moving on. If you want to talk UFC Hall of Fame, please discuss the ridiculousness of having two current fighters in it. From our good friend, my first question from Matt the Donk. BJ Penn and Uriah Faber are both active fighters now. That means that 50% of the modern era wing is still competing. I like to think that this is one of the reasons most North American sports with a, quote, real Hall of Fame have a five-year waiting period. It also makes sense to have cooling off period to make sure that 5 years after retirement, a resume truly stands up and we're not inducting someone based on the emotional high of a great retirement fight. Thoughts on the above, and do you ever think MMA will have a real Hall of Fame? Now, before we get in, I am a huge baseball fan. Like, that is my favorite sport. And baseball has obviously made exceptions for the immediate induction. Roberto Clemente is the one that comes to mind. He tragically passed away in a car, a plane crash, and he was, like, immediately inducted in the Hall of Fame. That seems to be the exception. But there is that five-year waiting period. And during those 5 years, a lot can change. Like, you saw, like, the steroid era. Like, in those, like, you see public, like, when Barry Bonds retired, he was not well-liked by the media, by fans, whatever. 5 years later, his numbers are starting to go up. But Alex, do you think there should be a five-year waiting period? And what do you think about Uriah Faber and BJ Penn, two Hall of Famers still competing?
Man, in MMA, real, the word real, that's one of those words with like deserved. When people say deserved, that's another word in MMA that I feel like is very malleable, unfortunately, and in some ways not applicable to anything. So what is a real Hall of Fame? I don't know. So I'll go from last to answering the last part to the first part. I can't imagine, will there ever be a real Hall of Fame? The question is, who will pay for it?
Yeah,
that's the question you want to ask. Who will pay for a real Hall of Fame? Who will oversee it? Because in North America, I mean, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, Dana White and the UFC are the kind of the purveyors of MMA history in North America. Probably that's not the way it should be, but that is the way it is now, at least in the eyes of the general public. So, you know, their Hall of Fame to a lot of people is the quote unquote real MMA Hall of Fame. Having active fighters is a bit strange. I don't know what you do with a guy like BJ Penn, who I think technically retired. His first retirement was definitely more than 5 years ago. He just didn't stick to it. So I don't know if that's the UFC's fault. Faber is sort of an odd one. Yeah, they could have let that simmer for a while. But again, really, it's, you know, as far as how silly is it to have active fighters, really the timing is just based on who can they get, who's, as people always say, who is Dana White's friend. And on the timing thing, I want to say, like, I saw someone asking, why didn't they induct George St. Pierre this year? And it's like, they already have names this year that they're inducting. They'll save that for next year. So it's really just a scheduling thing, as silly as that sounds.
It very much reminds me of the WWE Hall of Fame, yeah, where it's basically like, we need one big name and then a couple. And then there's like tiers where, and in the eyes of, like you said, the fans, like, that's probably like their go-to Hall of Fame, but there's no like physical building and it's all like WWE, UFC, no one votes on it. They're just like inducted into Hall of Fame. It's not like the baseball and football and basketball Hall of Fame where the media members vote. And then if you don't get in that year, you appear on the ballot next year. And then I think it's like 10 or 15 years of being on the ballot. If you don't make it, then you fall off. Or if you get below a certain threshold, like say you get below 5%, you just automatically fall off. And then you see Jim Rice where it took him the entire time, like 15 years to make the Hall of Fame, when a lot of people thought he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's another story. But I do wish there was just an MMA Hall of Fame. Like, then you could bring in Pride. You could bring in, like, the WEC. You could bring in Strike Force. You can bring in all of these guys. But like you said, who's going to do it? Because in professional wrestling, there are a lot of Hall of Fames. There's the WWE Hall of Fame. There's, like, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. There's, the, like, the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame that was created in, like, 2002. So there's a lot. I wish they would all be under one group. But the UFC Hall of Fame is pretty much as close as we're going to get to right now. Because, like, MMA, is as an organized sport, like the UFC, is not that old. Like, baseball is hundreds of years old, so they can go back through the annals of time and have all this rich history. The UFC does not. Obviously, Strikeforce is no more. WC is no more. Pride is no more. But I would love a physical MMA Hall of Fame building. I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to get it, especially because, like, have you been to the Baseball Hall of Fame or anything like that?
Never been.
So if you go, they obviously have wings of all this, like, old, like, you can see Babe Ruth's real bat. You can see Michael Jordan's real shoes. Like, you go to the Boxing Hall of Fame, you can see Muhammad Ali's gloves. Like, if they do an MMA Hall of Fame and they put everything under one banner, like, you're going to have to get these things. I don't think the UFC is going to give an MMA Hall of Fame, like, these are the gloves that Anderson Silva wore when he front kicked Forrest Griffin. Like, no, they're going to keep that for themselves. So I don't think we will ever see it, but I would very much love it. Because I love going to all of those museums. They are museums. I love going to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the hope. And I just wanted to add that, again, you know, the names going in this year, I think, just to name three, Bisping, Rich Franklin, and Rashad Evans. Correct. So, yeah, so they're pretty much loaded as far as inducting people this year. So,
and then, but then they run into the same problem that the WWE has, and I'm sorry to keep bringing that up, but, like, when someone has an issue with, say, Vince McMahon, they should be in the Hall of Fame, but they're not. Like, Owen Hart should be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Frank Shamrock should be in the UFC Hall of Fame, but because they have this negative relationship with Dana White, they are not. So I do wish there was, if it's just the UFC, whatever. I wish it came down to more than just one person saying yay or nay. Like, put it to a vote.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm going to get all heated. I could talk about Hall of Fame forever. But moving on, from LFMWA, ex-UFC fighters turned champs versus current champs. Interesting. List of hypothetical matchups based on UFC fighters who left the organization that captured gold in other promotions versus current UFC champs of their division. Heavyweight. Bader versus DC, Phil Davis, former champ, versus John Jones. They were teased before Davis got beat by Ron. I was actually at that fight. Musasi versus Adesanya, or I guess you could throw Whitaker in there too, obviously. McDonald versus Kamaru, Horiguchi versus Cejudo. So they didn't really ask a question whether we thought win or lose, but of those, so I'll ask a question. Of those fights I named, which one would you be most interested in seeing play out?
Oh, I mean... Okay, just looking at it, I think Musasi Adesanya. I don't know, that's probably the obvious answer,
right?
Yeah, I think Musasi Adesanya, and then secondly, I guess Horiguchi Cejudo. How about you?
I like to see Gegard Mousasi versus Robert Whittaker. I mean, he is technically the champion, he doesn't have interim tied to him. Horiguchi versus Cejudo would be awesome. That could be two different weight classes, too. That could be a flyweight, that could be a champ versus champ in a couple weeks. Because Horiguchi is obviously fighting Bellator for Darren Caldwell's title. He's the risen champion. And then Cejudo's fighting Marlon Moraes for the bantamweight. So that could be champ versus champ. That would be awesome. And obviously DC versus Bader at heavyweight. I would favor DC. Obviously, I think DC could be one of the greatest heavyweights ever. If he had stayed his whole career, he'd probably be the greatest heavyweight. But he didn't want to fight his teammate. I'd say Bader DC is probably second for me just because we were supposed to have that happen. And that is champ versus champ. Bader did win that Grand Prix. So I'd probably say Musasi versus Izzy / Whitaker, and then Bader DC for sure. Plus, Bader's an ASU guy. Always watch him fight.
Phil Davis is a little bit of an odd choice. I get the theme is that they have to be ex-UFC fighters who became champions in other promotions.
I was at that fight, UFC 172 in Baltimore, when Phil Davis, the whole media day, was talking about he was fighting Rumble Johnson, who was coming back from World Series of Fighting run after he got cut after losing to Vitor Belfort and his whole weight debacle. Anthony Rumble Johnson was coming back to the UFC and got paired up with Phil Davis. And all week, Phil Davis only talks about John Jones, who was fighting Glover Teixeira in the main event. And then when they were doing the stare downs, when John Jones came out to face off Glover, Phil Davis walked out and tried to stare down John Jones at media day. And then he ends up losing to Rumble Johnson. So I remember that very vividly. But we've already seen Bader versus John Jones. So Phil Davis was John Jones. I guess the next one, that makes sense. So, yeah. But, again, that's the one I would least like to see.
Yeah, the Rory versus Usman one would be interesting as well. I don't know how much luster Rory has lost with, you know, again, going out to fight Musashi, which was just probably a mistake. And then kind of a – pardon me – kind of a – I don't want to say, you know, disappointing, but – you know, not his best performance, you know, to put it nicely, against John Fitch, a guy who I think a lot of people would have predicted he would just run through. With no disrespect to Fitch, just given where they are in their careers and how good I think people still think McDonald is. But after that, I think you'd see a lot of action coming in on Usman. I think a lot of people would pick Usman. Now, would I? You know, I'm maybe it's the Canadian bias, Jose. I'm still a believer in McDonald. I still think he'd be able to pull that one out. But that, you know, that Usman, he's on a hell of a run.
I agree 100% with you that Rory definitely lost some luster fighting to a draw and his post-fight comments. And that obviously, so you're only as good as your last performances. And he lost, he got like destroyed by Gegard. Obviously that was middleweight, but that's still fresh in people's mind. And then his next fight, when he could erase that memory, he fights John Fitch to a draw and then basically moves on in the tournament due to a technicality. So I agree with you 100% that Rory's definitely lost luster. But I think if Rory is 100% sharp and 100% focused, I think he could be any welterweight on the world. I think he's one of the best. He's one of the most talented fighters. But at this point, you have to be alarmed about his comments. And but yeah, I 100% agree with you.
The Neiman Gracie fight will be very telling as to.
I agree, and a lot of I was at Bellator in Chicago recently, and a lot of people I asked said Neiman Gracie is the dark horse to win this whole thing, and Josh Thompson even said that he's not even the dark horse. I would favor him to win this whole thing. Because I asked him, I go, should MVP versus Lima, basically the winner of that, should they be the favorites? Now that Rory's like fought to a draw. And he says, Neiman Gracie's my favorite. So if he can get past Neiman Gracie in not even an emphatic fashion, but just actually win against the guy his fellow fighters are picking to win the tournament, I think that's going to do wonders for his career. But moving on. From our friend, the Big Squish. Is this as big as the UFC gets? One bona fide global superstar across the entire roster at the top of their game earned around 1 million pay-per-view buys. Or can it get bigger still? Now, this is an interesting question because I asked Sean this. That 1 million pay-per-view buys was the gold star. This is what, like, when you, if you hit if you go over a million, that is a milestone. Like, there's obviously, like, the Brock Lesnar's. I think Rashad Rampage do a million buys when they were beefing back in the day?
It was close,
George St. Pierre's, Connors, Ronda's, like these people get a million buys, but that is the old pay-per-view model. Now that you have to go on ESPN Plus to buy, I asked Sean this, what do you think in your mind is the new gold star? Like to me, we both kind of agreed that in the early stages, like 350,000 buys on ESPN Plus is going to be a huge win. And before that obviously wouldn't be a big deal. But can it get bigger? And what do you think should be the new gold star? This is my question. What do you think should be the new standard for milestones and pay-per-views?
You know, I feel like Sean and I discussed this as well when I made my A-side debut. It is, and I feel like it gets asked every week, as it should, because I think we're still very early in the ESPN Plus phase, and the metric as the results come in, again, they didn't sound very promising for the first couple of shows that have been on ESPN Plus. It does seem to keep moving the goalposts. So definitely 1 million buys on ESPN Plus appears to be unreasonable.
Very unreasonable in the early days.
It's 250,000 too low. Well, I mean, I hope they're using some other method of tracking like viewership numbers as well for their like their free cards. Because, I mean, look, one championship, they said they had, what, I think 500 million people or something watch, you know, the one of their shows recently. So, you know, I would hope being somewhat facetious. But you guys said around 200,000. I still think, gosh, that 1 million number, it sounds so nice, but it's just nearly untouchable now. I'm willing to say $500,000. You know, if I'm just keep things round and do I think it's possible if they find the right star? Because we haven't seen, you know, we haven't seen Conor McGregor in the ESPN Plus pay-per-view era. So there's your measure right there. How many can Conor bring in? And I think for him, maybe over $500,000 even. And then after that, we'll see, you know, how many the second tier.
You know, ESPN wants Conor to fight on that pay-per-view. Oh, yeah. I think that I agree with you that when Conor fights, whether it's a main event or co-main event or whatever, like that will be the true test on how successful the ESPN Plus era can be. Because now that Brock Lesnar, quote unquote, has retired, like whether that's true or not, like there's obviously the rumblings that he wanted a bulk like sum, like a flat sum, because he wasn't going to get the pay-per-view points. I think you're right on the money with that. Like whenever Conor fights again, that will be very telling. And I bet, you know, ESPN Plus will probably like, why, imagine having Conor on just regular ESPN, not even a pay-per-view. Like that would crush ratings. So, but I know Conor wants to get paid, but answer this question. Can it get bigger? That was like his main thing. Like, where do you think the UFC, how big do you think the UFC will be in a few years?
It can always get bigger. So many of the moves they've made, I always feel like, as far as building a fan base, have been counterproductive. I mean, going as far back as to when they made the Reebok deal. You know, it was a time when I think some of their stars were starting to fight less frequently or were aging out. And what they needed at the time was to build new guys and have people come out with their personality. And then they suddenly said, nope, you're all wearing black shorts or white shorts or gray shorts, whatever it was at the time. And essentially killed that. Now I know people will say, well, how come their profits keep going up every year and they keep making so much money? They're a great business. They're really good at finding new resumes, new revenue streams and capitalizing on what they have. And so even when it seems like, I hear people telling me all the time, oh, I don't watch UFC anymore, I don't know people who watch UFC, they know how to get as much money as they can out of the audience they have and leverage that into TV deals and streaming deals. And so how much can it get bigger as a business? I mean, the sky's the limit. Fan base wise, I hate to say that it peaked like 10 years ago, because I don't think it has. But I understand why it's hard for some people to see it ever reaching sort of that exciting, you know, and buzz period.
I don't agree with Dana White often, but one thing that stuck out to me years ago is like when Anderson Silva lost and Chuck Liddell had retired a few years before that, and you were losing a lot of your, and Tito Ortiz left, and Randy Couture and him had that big falling out. Like, what are you going to do without your big stars? And he's like, we can always make new stars. And then all of a sudden Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor popped up. So the UFC always seems to find their way out. But I'm not too concerned about the UFC going anywhere. How big can it get? Being on ESPN is a huge deal for them. Like being able to show fights and talk about fights on the mothership of sports networks, it's not a bad thing. But moving on, all right, MMA fighting's direction going forward. Morning, gents. Looking forward to the new version of the A-side. Jose addressed this a bit last week, but how is everyone in the company handling the departures of Ariel, Mark, Shaheen, Chuck, Dave, etc.? And then he goes on farther, but like, I'm sure there are some things you can't discuss, but any light you can shed on the situation would be greatly appreciated. Still a loyal listener and reader here. I'm just curious. And I will say, wherever Sean and Chuck are going, they're still going to be covering MMA. So they're not leaving this landscape. If anything, they might create more, their departures have created more opportunities. Like for a perfect example, I would never be hosting this if Sean was still here, and I wish he was because he's one of my close friends, but we're not going anywhere. MMA fighting isn't going anywhere. We're still going to work hard. I think we have the best staff in the MMA media, and I'll let you give your take in a second, Alex. But I said this last week, and I'll say it again this week. We're not going anywhere. We're still the best site. I think we have the best staff. Esther Lynn is the best photographer in just sports, not just MMA. Casey is by far the best videographer. Danny, Jed, Mike Chiappetta is still here. You, of course, we're not going anywhere.
Well, first of all, I disagree. We are going somewhere. We're going up, Jose. We're only going up now that we've shed the dead weight.
Wow.
Like a former host of this show who I won't name, but we've now shed the dead weight. This rocket ship is finally more aerodynamic than ever. It can finally rocket into the stratosphere. Of course, I'm kidding. I have nothing but love for all the guys. Like you said, we can't say where some of them are going, but you know where they're going. Trust me, they're going to keep producing incredible work, just as we will here at MMA Fighting. So follow us, follow them. Like I keep saying, MMA is fun. This is a good thing. You know, this is for the fans to have more options, more stuff to read. We're going to have new talent coming in. More people, you know, fresh voices getting a spotlight. It's super, super exciting. That said, I should admit that I am planning to leave for All Elite Wrestling. I did sign an exclusive deal with AEW. I will be joining AEW in July. So I haven't wrestled before, but it looks pretty easy. We were in Vegas. We were all in Vegas this past weekend. I think it'll be fun. They said whatever. They'll throw me around, drop me in my head a few times, like.
I'd much rather you be in Suburban Street Fight.
I know this is MMA. I know some of our viewers hate when we talk about pro wrestling. Can you just very briefly explain to them what Suburban Street Fight was? God.
So Suburban Street Fight is a wrestling promotion where basically it's wrestling with no ring. You're just out in the elements wherever you are. And there was a show in Las Vegas, AEW Fight Week, and I went with a couple of MMA Fighting staff, and it was basically we were in a bar of a concert venue or a roller rink or whatever. It was a small bar. I think the capacity was like 500, 600 people. That was maximum. And it was on the top floor, and we walked in and the wrestlers just wrestled amongst the fans. It'd be like being at a concert and they're just being two wrestlers fighting each other in a concert. Like security was like, move, 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 move. And then like the wrestlers would drag each other through the crowd, throw them onto like there was like a area, like if when it is a bar that was like for bottle service, and they're like wrestling on the bar and wrestling on the stage and jumping off ladders. Like I got real nervous because the ceiling was so low and there were a lot of ceiling fans there. So I was terrified for them. But that to me was one of the most unique experiences I've ever experienced. So if you're going to do wrestling, I would 100% support you moving to Suburban Street Fight.
Guys, if anyone wants to see pictures of what Jose is talking about, you can go to Esther's account at All Elbows on Twitter. She's got a Facebook album with a bunch of pictures as well, and some highlights on Twitter. Let's relate that to our last question. could the UFC get bigger? Yeah. What if they got rid of the octagon, Jose? How about that? What do you think?
All right, Joe. That seems to be like we want to fight on a football field. That seems to be his go-to suggestion.
I don't think I've heard that one, and I'm not sure why that would be appealing, but I'm just saying I agree. What if they had a fight in a pool? Like it's a movie, it's a fight in a pool hall. Guys are pushing guys, but you know, you can't escape. It's like you're trying, there's no, you know, all those guys, those shifty fighters, defensive fighters. No, you gotta just get pushed back into the center of the circle and just brawl.
So basically the hardcore championship from the WWE of yesteryear.
1 million buys.
Honestly, if Conor McGregor fought Jose Aldo in a street fight, for sure a million buys.
Two million.
Honestly, probably. Anyway, moving on. One championship is super sketchy, right? And I wanted to stretch. He added a lot of use from Hardy Har Har. Head honcho, Chachri City Dog, out here making Putin moves. Ah, okay. Overturned the past weekend results he doesn't like. Keeping the weigh-in process clear as mud, creating onerous agent certification systems, blocking Mr. Jack Slack for pointing these bits and pieces out. Say what you will about Uncle Dana, but he always allowed even the biggest stars to lose. Am I just a biased consumer of an American media, or is there something very off about one championship? This is an interesting question. Some of the stuff I wouldn't compare him to Putin or anything like that, but the weigh-in process is definitely murky. Them weighing in like behind closed doors and not seeing the results, that to me, I wish we would see that. I mean, and Sean and I touched upon this a little bit, but like, am I a biased American consumer? Like even their biggest stars lose, like Eddie Alvarez and Sage Northcutt, they lost. Like Sage Northcutt broke his face. He might not ever be the same again, but I'm curious to hear your take on this. I missed the last one championship fight, but I don't think it is. The weigh-in process is definitely the one that stands out to me for sure.
So just to very quickly explain one of the comments in the question about overturning one of the past weekend's results. So they're having a kickboxing tournament, and in the semifinals, Giorgio Petrosian and Pechmarakat Pechindi, I'm sure I butchered that, but had a fight, and it looked like Pechmarakat won. and it was later overturned. Something about his clinching. His clinching was illegal, his clinching technique. And it seemed to be fishy because Petrosian was one of the favorites going to the tournament, and it looked like they wanted to have him as one of the finalists. So again, I'll admit, I did not watch that fight closely. There was another great fight. There's a couple of great kickboxing fights in that card, but I did not watch someone closely. And also, I feel like my knowledge of kickboxing clinch legality is not top-notch. So I can't say for sure how fishy that was. I guess they're saying combined with everything else. The weigh-in process, like you said, is an odd one. If I could just be like, you know, Luke Thomas for a second, I'll just say, you know, all you donks out there that are saying that, one fixed weight cutting, where's your proof? You know, they're always coming at me with the fixed weight cutting. Where's the proof? I couldn't think of any other Luke Thomas. Okay. How much do you lift?
How much do you lift?
He doesn't say that, but it's like, I'm very strong. I can't grow a beard, so I apologize for the poor Luke Thomas impression. But I don't like sketchy. I think is a little unfair, and like you said, sort of the Putin comparison is a little unfair. The agent thing is wild. I can't wait to see how that plays out.
That was gonna be my next question, because there's a lot of like Malki Kawa, I think he said on Twitter, like, what are they like? How are they gonna not allow me to do my job there? Like, he has some, like, he's Demetrius Johnson's manager, correct?
Yes.
So, like, how are they not going to allow, like, are they saying, like, oh, sorry, Demetrius Johnson, like, your manager doesn't meet our standards? Like, they're not going to say that. Like, I feel like there's obviously going to be exceptions to the rules. And I do remember that, now that you mentioned the Petrosian's overturning, I wasn't aware that was one championship, but that was very weird. But like you said, I'm not up to standard on clinching and everything, but I wouldn't call him super sketchy with four U's. But there's definitely some red flags that I wish they would clear up, if that's the proper term.
Yeah, and I know I remember Bloody Elbow did a good kind of deep dive on sort of how they were financing, because everyone was wondering how are they paying for all this insanely. For an insanely rapid expansion without any sort of clear, like, you know, pay-per-view model or who are their sponsors. And someone did a deep dive, and there's a lot of investors. So you know, we were talking about the UFC business before. One has a crazy amount of private investors right now, and again, so we don't know how much they're fudging the numbers. Again, we kind of joked about the 500 million views or whatever they said they had from one of their recent shows. I'm sure they have a very strong viewership. The 500 million was a bit much. We can't disprove it, but again, I say, you know, use your own discretion, I think, when looking at that kind of data.
So we're gonna jump over to Twitter now, because I know Sean and Mark would go almost 2 hours, but we're gonna try and condense it a little bit moving forward, especially for the first episode, so we can grow. But jumping to Twitter, our good friend Dan Shapiro has two questions. Could a big finish on Saturday be Makwan Amerikani's ticket to finally getting a fight in the U.S.? Seems like the UFC likes to groom a lot of foreign fighters in their native markets before bringing them to places like Vegas for big fights. Makwan feels due for the next step. Your thoughts? So Makwan Amerikani, obviously, he's I think his name is like Mr. Finland. That is his nickname. Yeah. He fights maybe once a year, if that. His first fight, I believe, was what, like an 8-second knockout over Andy Ogle. And then he's obviously, he is a high level wrestler, and he's actually been taking some amateur boxing fights. But it is weird, his lack of activity for being, he is a supermodel in Finland. Have you ever been to Makwan Amerikani's Tapology page? Go to his Tapology page. His profile photo is basically him in like a tuxedo, sitting surrounded by women. Like, that's him. He's a supermodel over in Finland. Maybe he doesn't need the money, maybe he's just likes to fight, maybe to fight or keep his name out there. But it is very odd that he's been so inactive and he hasn't fought in the States, specifically because he is a good looking guy, he has a huge following in Finland. He's not losing. I think he's what, 4-1, 5-1 in the UFC. So will a win, a, do you think it's weird he's never fought in the United States or maybe Canada or wherever else? And what do you think a win does for him on Saturday?
You know, I wish I could say I had the inside scoop on this, because we have to assume it's something to do with visa issues, right?
I would. That is my first thing. Like, maybe he can't fight overseas. I know there was a lot, there's been a lot of the Dagestani and Russian fighters, like even like Habib's mm-hmm. dad can't fly over to the United States to corner him. So I, that is my first inclinations, visa issues. But you were saying.
I think he's also had some injury problems as well, which has kept him away. And it could just be that that has kept him out of the minds of the matchmakers as far as when it comes to, finding a big U.S. card for him to fight on. He might enjoy fighting overseas. Again, I can't imagine to the point that he would, you know, sacrifice missing out on like a pay-per-view or something. But again, we don't know how a lot of these fighters work. So do I think a win will necessarily, you know, make it so that they have no choice but to put on a U.S. card? No, I don't think so. Again, like I said, I feel like there's circumstances. It has nothing to do with his success is what I'm saying. There are circumstances we might not be aware of, and I'm not sure what it's going to take, but they do seem to be missing out on a very marketable opportunity with this guy.
100%. He's very charismatic. I remember there was a video on YouTube. I can't remember who posted it, but at the press conference, someone asked him a question and his answer was literally just a wink and a smile. And then that got so many views over in Finland. And then there was another one of, we had like 500,000 views. It was literally just a video of Makwan Americani eating an apple. And it got so many views overseas. So he's a big deal over there. Maybe they don't want him to fight in the United States. Maybe they want to grow that market over there. But I don't know. A win, I believe, is his second win in a row, if I'm not mistaken. I think he had that split decision over Jason Knight on the UFC Liverpool. Yep, I see it right here. But then his only loss in the UFC is to Arnold Allen via split decision. So one judge rules that in his favor. He's an undefeated fighter in the UFC. I do wish he was more active. But before we move on, I was corrected. It is Suburban Fights, not Suburban Street Fights. So thank you for the correction. Suburban Fight, at All Elbows. Esther Lynn has a bunch of great photographs from that absolutely epic night in Las Vegas. But moving on, another question from Dan Shapiro.
Oh, wait, Jose, before, I just want to say, you got me thinking about the wink. You said he answered a question with just like a wink and a smile.
Yeah.
I feel like that doesn't work for, well, maybe it would work for you. It wouldn't work for, when I found in public, when I answer a question with a wink and a smile, one, it either only raises more questions, ones that I'm not prepared to answer, and, or two, someone calls the police. So, like I said, Makwan has something special about him. UFC should utilize that, and I should never wink and smile at anyone ever again.
Well, maybe if you get an 8-second knockout in your UFC debut, it'll give you a pass.
Well, I think we also know how I'm going to end the show, by the way, but go
ahead. Sure. Moving on. Another question from Dan Shapiro. Looking down the road a bit, how do you grade the Bellator 222 card? Rory McDonald versus Neiman Gracie, Chael Sonnen versus Lyoto Machida, Horiguchi versus Darren Caldwell, plus Dylan Danis, Aaron Pico, Bandejas. With no competition from the UFC that weekend, it could be a big night, but did they miss the mark by not booking a Saturday night fight? That's a very interesting question. The timing wise, I do think a lot of people have asked me, is this the greatest card, top to like main card in Bellator history? It's hard to argue against it. I mean, you got a very high level welterweight championship fight. Chael Sonnen versus Lyoto is going to bring in the casual fans. I mean, that's Chael Sonnen is one of the most popular fighters of all time. Lyoto Machida, former UFC champion, has wins over both the light heavyweight and middleweight Bellator champion. Right now, they're fighting a light heavyweight. Lyoto Machida obviously front kicked Brandon Couture, who is one of Chael Sonnen's teammates. Horiguchi versus Caldwell, that's promotion versus promotion. Then you obviously have Dylan Danis, Aaron Pico, and Ricky Bandejas. So it's hard to argue it's not the best Bellator card ever, but your thoughts on the timing of the card and the card as a whole?
Saturday is always going to be better than Friday. So, Dan, you're absolutely right about that. But as far as grading the card, man, that's a solid A. I don't know if you're getting a free card like that, or I'm sorry, I shouldn't say free. It's on DAZN. But you know, if you're a DAZN subscriber, I don't know if you can do much better than this. Like you said, we talked about just the main card super strong. You just said like guys like Ricky Bandejas in the preliminaries. You've got the debut of Reyna from Ryzen.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's another.
Yeah, Bellator. That was recently. Recently added. Hobson Gracie will be fighting on the prelims. Heather Hardy, Mike Kimball, a lot of hype around Mike Kimball, and Aaron Pico, of course, Aaron Pico and Adam Boritz. Adam Boritz is actually undefeated Hungarian fellow who could, you know, could be the next guy to put another dent in sort of that Aaron Pico hype train. Yeah. Either way, very exciting fight. So yeah, solid A all around. So great, good for them. I wish They could have found a way to make it happen on Saturday, but come on, people. Who do you think you are? What are you doing on a Friday night? Go check out, go hit that DAZN and watch these great guys in action.
And it doesn't hurt that it's at Madison Square Garden. I mean, that's obviously the most famous arena in the United States, but whether you like the physical arena or not, just it has that aura about it. But I agree with you. I wish it was Saturday, but this A-plus all around. I am very glad. Is Rory McDonald versus Gracie is the main event, correct? That was just announced, confirmed?
That is correct.
So I get like when they announced Chael versus Machida, that seems to be the main event. It was kind of on the posters and they were seated in the center of the press conference. But now that Rory has moved on and he's fighting Neiman Gracie in the main event, I love that. Championship fight should always headline over a gangster versus Lyoto Machida. But in my opinion, one of if not the best Bellator cards of all time. And I'm curious, because I've seen this happen at the UFC where, like, for UFC 205 is a perfect example. They had three title fights on that card, and they stacked the entire card. And then they had that New Year's Eve card, and then they had that Toronto card, like, literally, like, the next month. They had two pay-per-views. And then they had to cancel the January pay-per-view because they didn't have any fighters. Do you think they – and this is my question. Do you think they put too many eggs in their basket on this card? Like, down the road, are they going to be looking – for the big name fighters, with since so many are on this card?
No, I don't think they'll have that same problem. For one, it's not a, you know, it's technically not a triple. It might, you can maybe call it a triple main event, but one of them is not a title fight. You know, it's mm-hmm. a three rounder between Machida and Sonnen. Yes, two guys with big name value. But for one thing, I think a guy like Sonnen can fight fairly often. Mm-hmm. Since he's kind of like that. So that's good. You can kind of book him whenever you want and assume he doesn't take too much damage, which he rarely does. Hope that he's available, you know, in a pinch. I was just looking ahead to the next card. We've got Musasi and Lovato finally.
Yes.
And then that's Paul Daly and
Gallagher's on that card too, correct?
That's right. James Gallagher. And Jeremiah Labiano. And then Paul Daly, Eric Silva, Melvin Manhoef is fighting. So pretty good. It's gonna be in London. Yeah, so
we know these names. Like, are they gonna but they're gonna need a big main event to like bring people to DAZN. Do you think they've used too many of those names and on one card for building the future down the road? Because like Chael and Machida could headline a card. Horiguchi Caldwell could headline a card. Like Rory McDonald, Neiman Gracie headline a card. And like, honestly, Dylan Danis, whether he deserves it or not, could probably headline a card because he's so popular and he has that Conor McGregor rub. I don't think he should, but he's a popular guy. He's a big deal on social media. And Aaron Pico, everyone likes Aaron Pico. Do you think it will hurt that? Like, basically, I'm asking main events. Like, yeah, they can make big cards, but are they going to be hurting for main events down the road?
Right. Did they potentially just put three main events on one card? Yeah. Well, no, I think so. You said, is it going to make, you know, they need main events to keep making people come to DAZN. Really, they need to make people come to DAZN once and then hopefully stick around. So I assume that this kind of event is a tent pole or a gateway event, whatever you want to call it, you know, where it's so big, you get people to check it out. They enjoy the action and they say, hey, I'm going to keep my subscription, you know, because once you get them hooked, it's, I'm not sure, you know, exactly how the subscription business works, but I imagine getting them hooked is the first thing. And then, you know, you assume a lot of people keep their subscriptions for a few months and hopefully forever. But in this case, like I said, you bring them in, they like the action. They say, oh, this is own thing is pretty good. I also like football. I also like kickboxing and box. Boxing.
And I mean, Canelo is on DAZN too. So that's,
there you go.
I bet that's the vast majority of fans are tuning in for Canelo. And again, like maybe they stick around for Bellator coming off of that. But we're going to keep moving on. We have a question for you specifically, Alex. Well, I'm sure I can answer. But there's some – will Yoel Romero be the only fighter to win the big lawsuit for Tate supplements? We've answered that early. Seems a luxury only well-paid fighters can afford. Also, will the Raptors beat the Golden State Warriors?
I think like I said, we touched upon the lawsuit stuff already. Yes, the Raptors will beat Golden State in six games. As I said that, my throat just tightened up a little bit, but thankfully it's not me out there playing the game, so I can say whatever I want. I have a lot of faith in the Toronto boys. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. I still can't believe they're in the NBA finals, but I have a lot of faith in them.
I saw you this past weekend and I could tell you were a little on edge, not in a bad way, but like this could, like the reality was setting in for you.
Yeah.
So, but we're going to move on. We're going to wrap this up really soon. We have a question from some jabroni named Shaheen Al-Shadi. question for Jose. Can you please explain why you believe Spawn to be the best comic book character of all time? And there is not enough time in the world for me to describe my disdain for Todd McFarlane's Spawn. I truly believe he is the most unoriginal, worst, poorly drawn, worst written character in the annals of comic book history. If you look back, there's no, I can't think of one Spawn story where I was like, that was a good story, because they don't exist. They're all terrible. He has every power. He's an overpowered buffoon who can do whatever. It's just not good. It's very lazy. And then there's a follow-up question from another jabroni named Matt Wells, another good friend of the show. Follow-up, why is Deadpool so terrible for you?
Oh, boy, here we go. Same thing.
Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane, 1A, 1B on biggest jabronis in comic book history. They can't draw. They especially can't draw feet. They can't write. Everything needs, like, knives and lasers and guns and shoulder pads and pouches. Like, if Todd McFarlane and Rob Liefeld had their way, they would create a guy who could shoot knives out of their eyes, and then, like, all of a sudden their fist is a grenade. And it's just bad, poorly written stories. And if you enjoy them, I am sorry, but you're wrong. You probably laugh at shiny objects. You probably laugh at fart jokes. There are no words to describe my dislike for Deadpool and specifically Spawn. They are the worst comic book characters of all time. So thank you, Sean and Matt, and Luke Thomas for chiming in, because I assume he thinks Sean is being serious, where he thinks I enjoy Spawn, because everyone, I did host a comic book video show a few years ago, and I spoke about this. And it was pretty 50-50. A lot of people agreed with me. A lot of people did not agree with me. But for the people that didn't agree with me, you're all wrong. Spawn is terrible. Deadpool is terrible. I thought the first Deadpool movie was legitimately a decent movie. Like a movie, not a comic book movie. Like just a movie. The second one, I was very upset by how they made fun of Shatterstar, which is Benson Henderson's favorite superhero, which I will never let him forget. He compared himself to Shatterstar and Cable, and I was like, oh, really, guy? Come on. Pick a better hero than that. But before we move on, I will make
Let me just say, I would rather watch the Spawn movie again than watch the Deadpool movie. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. That's how I feel about the Deadpool movie. I don't like Deadpool at all.
They're making another Spawn movie starring
I'd watch the one with John Leguizamo and Michael Jai White. I would rather watch, if I had to choose, I'd rather watch that.
Would you rather watch Spawn or Deadpool? Is like, which one of your hands would you want to get cut off? Like, neither. I'd rather keep both hands and watch a good movie. But anyway, I digress, because I could talk about this 4 hours. I'll make one last peruse through Twitter, a few more questions on
Jose, while you're perusing, can I say we didn't talk about anything in the topic. I'm looking at the graphic and I'm like, oh, we've got four Alexander Gustafsson. Now look, it's because we got
that. I was gonna bring that up.
We got such excellent questions from our readers, so thank you readers for giving us more than enough to discuss. So for sure, I'm blaming the readers for having such great questions.
So I was gonna peruse Twitter one more time before I jump in. Alex, your initial thoughts on UFC Stockholm, especially the main event between Alexander Gustafsson and Anthony Smith. We had that rare weekend off with no UFC card, so it feels weird to me. Like, I was like trying to remember the last card, and I was like, wow, it's been 14 days since the last one. But your initial thoughts on Alexander Gustafsson versus Anthony Smith?
Man, I think that's a legit, like, could be a top five fight of the year candidate. I don't know if people think I'm crazy, but you have two guys here who are great, both great stand-up fighters, and also they both know that they're not going to be close to a title shot. If whoever wins is still going to be a few fights away from a title shot, so they can kind of let their hair down, as it were, you know. So I'm actually really, really looking forward to that main event.
I am ecstatic, especially after, like, I always thought that was a really good fight no matter what. Mm-hmm. I would watch that. And then Anthony Smith was on the MMA Hour yesterday, and he was speaking with our colleague Luke Thomas, and he was basically like, I don't give an F what happens in this fight. I don't care if I win. I don't care if I lose. I'm not thinking title shots. I'm not thinking where this puts me in the division. I just want to go and perform. He wants to hit Alexander Gustafsson as hard as he can, as much as he can. And if he wins, he wins. He basically just says, He wants to erase the memory of his last performance from his mind because it keeps him up at night. So a fired up Anthony Smith that basically doesn't care. I mean, he said that when he fought Rashad, when he fought Shogun, when he fought Vulcan, like, he just went in like, I'm going to beat this dude's ass. And that's where that seems like where he's at now, where he said against John Jones, he got too into a game plan and he forgot what got him to the dance, was his words. And then he finished it goes, I just need to destroy something. And I was like, all right, Tyler Durden, that's a little aggressive. But I am very, he sold me on, like, I was into this fight already, but he is so hyped for this. And if he wins or loses, obviously there's that Luke Rockhold fight out there. I mean, if there's one thing he spits fire at, it's Luke Rockhold. So I am 100% sold on this main event for sure. Obviously, neither one's going to get a title shot anytime soon. But speak of the devil, question just came in for both of us. If Alexander Gustafsson loses, is that it for him? Is there any fight flying under the radar? I assume flying under the radar means on the actual card itself, but I'll let you answer the Alexander Gustafsson question.
You know what? Give me a minute here. Sorry, I know we're running low on time. Here we go. Sorry, I just have my own little rankings here I'd like to take a look at. No, I don't. Well, first I'll say if he loses, I don't think he's done. I know he was saying on the MMA Hour the other day he wants to fight three times in a year, which seems unlikely since we're already in May. He rarely fights more than twice, but I at least like that he is in the mindset to do that. As for what good fights are there for him, gosh, you know, it's a little scary to think that he's entering the part of his career where he has such a name, you know, two-time UFC title challenger, and that they'll start using him as a stepping stone, you know, to push some of their younger guys. I'm just looking, light heavyweight is almost as shallow as heavyweight.
It's rough, man. Looking at it, like, there's obviously the Corey Andersons out there. Mm-hmm. Like, we have Dominic Reyes is out there. Corey Anderson's been calling him out. Volkan Ozdemir is fighting in the co-main event, correct, against Ilir Latifi, but Gustin's not going to fight Latifi. They're teammates, so the light heavyweight division is hurting right now.
I could see rematches, like a Shogun rematch or something. Like, he might be entering that phase of his career where, again, you just match him up with other guys who have names still, who aren't anywhere really realistically near the front of the contenders line. So it's kind of a grim assessment. But what I really mean to say is I think he has more fights in him. So if you're a fan of Gustafsson, that's a good thing.
100%. And there's just a mass exodus of fighters. And we've lost a lot of fighters, but we've gained Thiago Santos, Luke Rockhold, like Jan Błachowicz is who's obviously fighting Rockhold, but we've seen a lot of middleweights come up. So if more middleweights want to make that jump up to light heavyweight after seeing the success, there could be a lot of exciting fights, but maybe not fights that'll get him into the title contention. I don't know how much, like, if he fights a middleweight that comes up, like Rockhold versus Gustafsson, that was supposed to happen, I think, last year before Rockhold's like knee flared up, that would have been the fight to make in my mind. But Rockhold has his eyes set on John Jones. And then he has stuff. He has some issues with Anthony Smith to take care of before he fights Alexander Gustafsson. But the card as a whole, any fights flying under the radar for you?
Yeah, you know, I think overall, actually just looking at the main card, even at the undercard, but looking at the main card, this is a lot of exciting fighters. I know they might not have names that people recognize, but Daniel Tamer is a super exciting guy. We mentioned Amir Khani. This could be a big breakthrough for him. I think Manuel Rakic, that's going to be like the third last fight in the main card, has potential to be, again, good stand-up battle. So, and then on the prelims,
I want to talk about one name on the prelim that jumps out to me. Well, the fight is Stevie Ray versus Leandro Santos. Leandro Santos has not lost in the UFC. His only loss is to Norman Park, and he knocked out Kevin Lee, like, what, 4 or 5 years ago, and then he hasn't fought in 3 years. Like, he has a window with Tony Martin, Kevin Lee, Adriano Martins, Efren Escudero, and then he fought Norman Park to a draw. Like, it's weird to me because Leandro Santos is not the youngest fighter out there, but it's weird that we basically lost 3 years of watching this guy fight after getting legitimate victories over high level opponents. And I'm very curious to see if the sport has passed him by, how he'll perform after such a long layoff. And then Stevie Ray, I mean, he's just kind of like one of those quirky, fun favorites. I believe he fought, oh my God, I think it was Joe Lozon in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And someone was like, why are you fighting in Nashville? Like, because he's from overseas. And he's like, I just want to introduce myself to the American audience. Like, these are the fight cards, like the Nashville cards, the Cincinnati cards, the the Boise cards. Like, these are the cards that people tune in, like diehards watch. So he wanted to introduce himself, and he fought, and I believe he beat Joe Lauzon in Nashville. So fun guy. He has, I think he has a win over Ross Pearson too. So I am very excited for that fight.
Yeah, it's definitely intriguing. You mentioned Santos. He's not the youngest guy. He's actually 39 years old.
Yeah,
he looks very young.
What was, but you're right, it's 2016, 2017, something like that, correct?
He hasn't fought since October 2016.
Oh my gosh. I'm very excited to see him enter the octagon again.
Our own Guillerme Cruz has written quite a bit about him, so definitely check our site to see Guillerme's interview with Leonardo. But yeah, how much he has left in the tank, whether he will remain undefeated, that's definitely something to watch on Saturday.
So we're going to close up here, unless I'll make one last perusal over the UFC Twitter comment section. We're good. So I'll kick it to you, Alex. Like always, we will keep it in tradition. We get a little promo. The floor is yours, my friend.
I usually don't have a lot of stuff to plug other than some interviews I've had done recently. I'll be talking to Tatiana Suarez later today, hopefully. We kind of had featured her recently, but again, she's got that fight coming up. I believe it's next week. Is it UFC 230?
Yeah, 238. That's the
Chicago card. Yeah, next week. And that she everyone knows, everyone's talking about her as the next future champion. So we'll see where her head is at as we get closer to fight day. And Luis Pena, I spoke to recently, so we'll have a feature on him too. I know people love the violent Bob Ross, so that one is still coming. And I should have stuff coming on Nick Newell and John Gotti III, who are both fighting at CES this weekend. So look out for that, guys. And I'll leave you with a...
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. You don't have the scruff of and the jawline of Americani to pull that off.
I gave it a shot, Jose.
Hey.
I gave it a shot.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Good on you. But I don't have much to say at all. This was my first time hosting.
You were fabulous.
I hope so, man. And obviously moving forward, we're going to be back on the normal time. I hope you guys tune in. I know I'm not Sean. I know I'm not Mark. I know I'm not Luke. It's very weird to me that I'm now the host, because I remember watching Luke before I was even an MMA journalist doing this, and then Sean and Mark are two of my closest friends in the game. So it is very weird for me that not I am now the host. I don't know who will be joining us. I think we're going to be trying to do a rotation like Sean was doing. So you'll see a lot more of Alex down the road, but you'll also see Pete and Danny. Mike Chiappetta, I would love to get Mike Chiappetta on the show. He's one of the OGs and one of the best writers in the business.
He makes a lot of demands. He has a lot of demands. That's the problem. Yeah. He's a real diva.
He's a Yankees fan, isn't he?
I wouldn't know.
I think he's a Yankees fan. So that doesn't make sense. Obviously. Like, you tell me he's a Yankees fan, I'm like, oh, he's probably going to want all of this, like the red carpet rolled out for him. Whatever. This was my first show. You'll be seeing a lot more of me, but you'll be seeing a lot more of Alex. I hope you stick around. I had a lot of fun hosting this. It was a blast doing it with Sean last week. It was a blast doing it with Alex this week. But I'm Jose, that's Alex. Tune in next week, obviously, to the A-side. And then we obviously have the MMA Hour Monday. We got PC Carroll. If you haven't listened to his Eurobash, it is one of the best podcasts in all of MMA. He is one of the... His laugh is just infectious, man. I can't wait till he's back on the show again. You got the MMA Beat tomorrow. And then obviously the Stockholm card. I don't know if PT is there. I'll find out. But it's gonna be a new era of MMA fighting. But this will be up on everything: Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, all that after. But for me, I'm Jose. That's Alex, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, sorry.